Next Friday, producer J.J. Abrams' new monster flick, Cloverfield, hits theaters.
You don't know what we saw. The point is, it's still here.
Once you see it, nothing will be the same.
You know what that thing is?
Whatever it is, it's winning.
From producer J.J. Abrams.
Fight! We've got to fight!
Where are you taking her?
Cloverfield.
Nothing will be the same, Allison.
I know. I can't wait.
The movie centers around a yet unseen beast that attacks New York and, as seen on ad billboards, leaves the Statue of Liberty decapitated and lower Manhattan smoldering. It's a short mental jump from images like that to the real-life images of September 11th. But Cloverfield won't be the first monster flick to make thinly veiled references to a nation's tragedy. It turns out the original Japanese version of Godzilla was intended to evoke memories of Hiroshima and help restore Japanese national pride in the wake of World War II. And J.J. Abrams himself acknowledged the Godzilla connection when he talked about Cloverfield at a speech back in July.
I've wanted a monster movie for so long, and I was in Japan over a year ago with my son, who's 8, and we went to all these stores, and there were still all these Godzillas everywhere, and I thought, what's better than Godzilla? And I thought, you know, we need our own monster.
I like the people cheering for the word Godzilla.
Yeah.
Like they just hear it and they go nuts. Joining us now to discuss Godzilla's role in Japanese culture is another man who would cheer for Godzilla. And to help us draw parallels between it and Cloverfield, Bill Tsutsui, professor of history focusing on modern Japan at the University of Kansas. Hi, Professor.
Good morning.
Morning. So what were the cinematic and societal precursors to Godzilla's release in Japan?
Well, remember, Godzilla was released in Japan in 1954. That's only 9 years after the atomic bombings, 9 years after Japan's defeat in World War II. So those memories were still very fresh. Godzilla, the film was also really ripped from the headlines in Japan at the time. Very few people now remember something called the Lucky Dragon incident, but it involved a Japanese fishing boat that was caught by mistake in the Bravo test of H-bombs at Bikini Atoll. The sailors were exposed to radiation. This was front-page news in Japan. People called it the latest atomic bombing of Japan. And it was right in the wake of that event that the Godzilla movie came out. So it was really drawing on a lot of nuclear fear and a lot of memories of World War II.
What were the filmmakers trying to accomplish with it?
You know, some of the filmmakers were very idealistic. The director, for example, who'd passed through Hiroshima just days after the atomic bombing, said that he really hoped to have a strong political impact with the film. He hoped that this film would get nations like the United States to abandon nuclear testing.
Let's go through some of the plot points in the film to find examples of the use of World War II and Hiroshima and Nagasaki imagery. How does the movie begin?
The movie begins with a direct reference to the Lucky Dragon incident. We see these Japanese fishing boats destroyed by this mysterious glowing radioactive force. It's then found out by scientists that there has been a dinosaur living under the waves in the South Pacific. It was awakened by U.S. H-bomb testing, and for some reason it now feels the need to attack Japan. So in a series of nighttime raids, the monster proceeds to destroy Tokyo. And this is depicted in a very, very evocative way. We see Tokyo consumed in flames. And, of course, this brings to mind for viewers the firebombings of Japan, which, again, are less than a decade away. And in those scenes where we see the aftermath of the monster's destruction, you can't help but think of all those familiar images that all of us see of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, a wasted landscape, rubble everywhere, a few spindly burnt-out tree trunks still standing. It really would have captured for Japanese audiences in the day very close memories of the war.
But in this case, the Japanese rise up and conquer their enemy.
Exactly. I mean, this is what scholars have called secure horror, that you get to see your worst fears, that you have this experience of living through your real horror, but then in the end, everything's okay. What happens in the film is a Japanese scientist designs a super weapon called the Oxygen Destroyer, which is more powerful even than nuclear weaponry. And this weapon is used against Godzilla to kill him at the end of the film. So though Godzilla has destroyed much of Japan, the final message of the movie is thank goodness, we're all safe. The system can protect us.
What was the audience reaction when the film was originally released?
You know, it's funny. If you watch the film today, a lot of people laugh at the special effects. They can't really believe it was a very serious picture. But at the time, this was an adult serious picture with a real political message. It was said at the time that many people left the theater in tears.
And when the film came to America, things were changed around a little bit, right?
Considerably. People have said the movie was censored for the American market. The U.S. distributor didn't think that American audiences would really want to go see a giant monster movie that was politically critical of the United States and American nuclear testing policy. So about 20 minutes of the original film was cut out. Raymond Burr was put in, and just about all the interesting material about nuclear threat, World War II, all that was taken out.
The new American monster film Cloverfield that comes out next Friday, you've seen the trailer and some of the billboards that feature smoke coming from wreckage in Lower Manhattan. Do you see a parallel?
Completely. I mean, I have to say the materials coming out from Cloverfield look absolutely awesome. As a connoisseur of monster movies, this looks like a great one. If you just look at the trailer and the way it is set and seeing those waves of dust and rubble coming by, people running in a shop to hide from the monster, you can't help but think of 9/11. You can't help but think of some of the amateur video that was taken at the time. And the filmmakers, I think, have done an exceptionally good job, at least from these small snippets I've seen, of tapping into some of that fear that we all have, that fear from a very human perspective that characterized 9/11.
Professor Bill Tsutsui is a professor of history focusing on modern Japan at the University of Kansas. Professor, thank you for coming in and talking about Godzilla with us.
A real pleasure. Thank you.
And that does it for this hour of the Bryant Park Project, but we're always available online at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Allison Stewart.
I'm Daniel Holloway.
This is the BPP from NPR News. We'll see you real soon.